First and goal at the 5, middle of the field to our right. Robinson, the senior, to snap it. Two tight ends, power set. To give, running left is Barrett. Barrett, a little hesitation, now turns on the accelerator and is in for the touchdown, running left from 5 yards out. And Beloit strikes first. They take advantage of the bad punt snap. They lead 6-0 in this 2A state semifinal. Owen Eiler takes the knee. The Beloit Trojans, 22, Kingman, 19. For the sixth time in school history, and for the first time since 2013, the Beloit Trojan football team has punched their ticket to the state championship game.
That was a call on Friday night, as the Beloit Trojans are the last team standing in our listening area and the last team to have a chance at a state championship when it comes to football, and that opportunity will be this Saturday. Please do not drive to Hutchison. Well, you can, but you'll miss the game. The game is in Salina, 1 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. We will have a special one-hour noon pregame, so one-hour pregame for state championship football. Beloit taking on Rossville. We'll have it for you on KD Country 94 right here and KDCountry94.com. And we cannot live video stream the state championship game, so that is in the hands of Keisha. Sorry, not our rules, theirs. So you can get that free KD Country 94 app on your smartphone as well, so you can listen wherever you may be across the world, and you can hear the state championship game. Once again, special one-hour pregame show beginning at noon, kickoff at 1, 9-3 Beloit's. Two of their losses to two very good football teams in 3A, and the other loss to a team that lost just a couple games all year, Hoisington. Taking on Rossville, who's won 25 in a row. They are defending 2A state champs. They have won the state title 4 of the last 7 years. So it will be a tough task, no doubt, for Beloit to knock off the heavy favorite to win 2A before the season began. And certainly after what they did to Silver Lake last week, I'm sure pretty much everybody in the state is going to pick Rossville to win the game. But all you ask for is a chance, a shot. And Beloit's the last team that has a shot at knocking off Rossville this season. And it will kick off at 1 o'clock from Salina. It looks like the weather is going to be very nice as of now based on the weather forecast. So look forward to bringing you all the coverage for Beloit Trojan football. You know, I got to say, I almost sent a text to Coach Remus and Coach Eilert and Coach Nemchek. They got to step up their games here, because Beloit volleyball went to state, and now the Beloit football team going to state. I'm talking, you know, collective teams. Yeah. And so now the onus will be on the girls' basketball, the boys' basketball, and the wrestling program. And and Coach Eilert's probably sitting there going, and Coach Nemchek, can I get my team first?
Can I get my guys first?
That's the one. There's a few things that's bad about having state championship game on Thanksgiving weekend. I don't like it personally. I've never liked it. I think that Thanksgiving should not be interrupted by football practices. I don't think Thanksgiving should be interrupted by state championship games. And I don't mean that as in you shouldn't have practice on Thanksgiving Day or have state championship games. What I'm saying is Keisha could easily avoid this. All you have to do is start the season 1 week earlier. That's it. And the state of Missouri starts sometimes 2 weeks ahead of us.
Yeah, Missouri's two. I think Colorado's one.
I know Nebraska's one.
Yeah.
So other states around us start a week earlier. All we have to do is start a week earlier. And then we'd be done November 20th. And there's so many reasons why this is a better idea. First of all, you can actually spend time with your family on Thanksgiving Day all day long and not have to worry about a game coming up in 48 hours. You don't have to worry about practice on Thanksgiving Day. You don't have to worry about eating way too much and not being ready to go for the game on Saturday, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The other advantage to it, of course, is that it would be helpful for the wrestling and basketball coaches to get their kids on the 22nd of November so that they don't have 3-4 practices before their first basketball and wrestling matches of the year. And, you know, I talked to Mr. Faflick about this, I think, this past summer when we had him on the show, and I asked him about that. Well, you know, they're thinking money. I mean, honest to God, that's what they're thinking. They're thinking money, because he said something about, well, you know, more family and friends, you know, being visiting and doing this and doing that. I'm like, so they come Thursday, but a lot of people like to go back on a Friday. They don't necessarily stick around for 4 days. All the way through Sunday or Saturday night.
And my family can't, because Dylan's got basketball practice, right?
Like, right.
So he can't even be there the whole weekend. Like, right. If we would say, hey, let's go to the 2A game in Hayes, or right. The 1A game, I mean, in Hayes, and watch that as a family, you know?
Right.
We can't do that because
yes.
they could go back home.
Yes. And I Acacia so easily could fix this. It's so super easy to fix. You just simply start a week earlier. That's it. That's all you do. It would help the basketball coaches, the wrestling coaches, the winter sports coaches. It would help a lot of families. It would help us in the media as well, no question, because we have a life and we have families too. And, you know, the other thing just for me, I mean, I know my kid plays basketball. He didn't play football this year. And there's a practice on Friday morning, and there was going to be one Saturday morning. But because of the state football game, I guess that's why we're not having it on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, guess what? He's going to miss Friday morning because family is going to be first. And that's not a knock on having practice on Friday at all. I hope people understand me. I believe the reason that coaches have a practice, especially basketball and wrestling coaches, that they have a practice the day after Thanksgiving, I think the reason being, especially for those schools that I know are going to be behind the eight ball when football is still going.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand utilizing as much time as you possibly can, but at the same time, sorry, you know, it's just going to be – our family doesn't live locally. You know,
yeah, exactly,
our family
yeah.
lives 2.5 hours each direction in this state. So we will miss a practice. It's not a big deal. I've already talked to, you know, people. They're like, yeah, that's no big deal. Nobody's mad about anything. I'm not upset about it because I understand what coaches are trying to do. They're trying to utilize as much time as they
sure,
can,
exactly.
especially for ones that are still dealing with football teams that are still playing. I totally get that. But what I'm saying is I believe, and I could be wrong, I believe if Acacia would start the season a week earlier, I think more coaches might be a little bit more open to, well, I got – a little more practice time under my belt, and maybe I can give Friday and Saturday off
mm-hmm.
and then go at it Monday because I already had 3 good days of practice the week of Thanksgiving already on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And when I say 3 days of good practice, you could say, well, you're already doing that. No, no, no. What I'm saying is right now, Beloit doesn't have half their basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. So they're going to have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of next week to get ready for a game against Concordia. Okay. And wrestling the same way, they're going to have not much time for their first match. And it happens at Smith Center almost all the time.
Yeah.
So we're not crying for Beloit. That's a great problem to have. But what I'm saying is if Acacia would start the season a week earlier, you'd alleviate a lot of these issues. I've talked to some family people that are already like, man, this can be tough. Like, mm-hmm. we're super happy about going to state. But at the same time, it's like, how do you shuffle? How do you do this? How do you do that? And I just know for me personally, of course, we sucked in football, so I never had to worry about it. But if it were me, I wouldn't want to be like sitting here worried about what I can and can't eat on Thanksgiving because of a game in 2 days. I'd rather have my season wrapped up in the state title game the Saturday before. And how cool would it be to be going to Thanksgiving with your family and friends celebrating a state championship instead of stressing about, okay, I got to do this on this play and I got to be here on this play. Do you think your mind as a kid is completely on enjoying your family on Thanksgiving Day?
No, not
when you have a state title game. Do you think your coaches are really actually into Thanksgiving and eating turkey when they're worried about the opponent on Saturday? So once again, I am not trying to say that coaches are doing anything wrong. They're not. I want to make this very clear.
No,
coaches are just doing
because of
the coaches are doing
the schedule.
The coaches are doing what they have to deal with. And I think Acacia could make it so much easier on everybody. But when I had Mr. Favlik on, he basically, I mean, I could go back and play it, but he said something to the extent of, well, we think that, yeah, we've heard that a little bit, but we think that the people, that families say they kind of like that because they get together at Thanksgiving and then they could go to the game together and whatever. I'm like, well, here's another thing that Acacia could fix. Sorry, I'm not meaning a rant on Acacia, but why is every game at 1 o'clock? Why can't the games, at least like 3 of them, be at 1 and 3 of them be at 4 and maybe 2 of them at 7 o'clock? Like, why can't we space those out just a little bit so that maybe you could go to 2 of them as a fan? Like,
eight man's the only one you can actually go down and see both games.
Both games,
you know?
Right, right. So I don't think they need to all be at the same site. I don't know how that would even ever possibly work because you wouldn't have enough time
in the
day.
Yeah, you couldn't do it in a day.
No, but I think that's another thing that Acacia could do that would be a lot easier on people because there are family members that have kids they know or want to support that are at Salina and Newton, which you could easily go from Salina to Newton if the games
Absolutely,
were spread,
yeah.
and they're not. Yeah. Or if you Salina Hutchison, there'd be another one. That wouldn't be that hard. You play one at 4 and the other's at 4:30 or 4. Okay, you might miss a little bit, but you could go from the 2A title game and go support a friend at the 3A title game.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another thing that they could probably make a little bit better. It is what it is. I understand it, and I just think it could easily be alleviated. All you have to do is follow the lead of people around you and that's the other states around us, and simply start a week earlier. If you want to start 2 weeks earlier, that's fine with me too. But start a week earlier, that would help a lot. For families, I think it would help for us as media people. It would help coaches for the winter sports. It would help, I think, the coaches for the football team as well, because now they could absolutely relax a little bit on Thanksgiving Day, knowing that the football season's over, no matter if they win it all or not, on November 20th instead of November 27th. That's just my two cents.
Listen, I loved it because, I mean, Blitz really the only one we do play-by-play for that plays 11-man football. So right. I loved it when that 8-man game was a week before the 11-man games because it was – I mean, I would have
– 8-man had their own day.
Thunder Ridge or Osborne or, you know, those teams that we were covering. Rock Hills made it 1 year to the state championship. And it's like I have – you know, I have, the coaches have, the kids have for the winter sports a little bit more time there to get ready, right?
Yes.
And you have a week and a half instead of – you know, 4 or 5 days once you get into the practice room or the gym, wherever you're at, to actually get going here. And so I love that. Now, I didn't like the reason that they played a week early, because they played the 3 games in 10 days type of deal to start the playoffs.
Right.
So they kind of alleviated that problem, but the alleviation could have been add a week to the season at the front, not the end.
Right.
I mean, we talked about it back then. I'm like, that would have been the easiest way to do it. Let's start a week earlier. We've been saying that for years.
Yes, we have.
And it's like, and coaches have been saying that for years.
So why do we not do it?
Yeah, and that's what I don't get about it.
Because Kasia
just sit here and wait, and I don't think it's safe for the kids either.
No,
be having 4 days of practice and then playing a game on Friday. I mean,
games are Saturday.
No, what I'm saying is when you get into basketball.
Oh, yes.
For the kids after football, they have 4 days of practice.
Some play on a Thursday.
3 days of practice and play on Thursday, or 4 and play on Friday. I mean, basketball and wrestling shape aren't football shape, right?
No.
You know? And but Kasia, I guarantee, is going to come back and say, well, there's only 16 teams that are dealing with that. There's only 16 schools that are doing that. Everybody else has had at least a week and a half of practice here. I know that's what they'll probably say when you kind of present it that way, too. And it's like, well, I don't care how many teams there are. It's still not
safe
or good for those teams, the 16 that are still alive.
You know what my counterargument to that would be? Why do you have buffer week and keep kids from going to the gym and working on their game or doing this or doing that and cut off school facilities? And then these poor – I mean, listen, I watched Beloit play Friday night. They're banged up, man.
Mm-hmm.
They got a running back broke his leg. They've got a quarterback that's banged up. They've got kids banged up. And trust me, it's not just Beloit. Every team at this stage of the season in high school football, they got kids that are banged up. And you expect them to roll around, play a game on Saturday, turn around and play and wrestle and practice on Monday? And trust me, I know coaches, including our own, that he usually gives them a couple days off for practice the very next week because he understands that. And I applaud those coaches that understand that these kids are not robots. They're 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old young men or women or whatever it might be. And, you know, state volleyball is over. You know, for the girls, state volleyball is over the end of October. They got plenty of time to transition into a different sport. I'm happy for them. They're able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But and cross-country can.
Runners,
but you cannot win football when you go deep in the playoffs. And I've never understood. The buffer week is pointless. Because the buffer week, well, we're trying to protect the kids. If you really want to protect the kids, you wouldn't have them play basketball and wrestling the very Monday after a state title game on Saturday. If you truly cared about the kids,
you're going to go to the practice.
To me, the buffer week should be at the end of the football season. Okay, the very end of the football season, that's a whole week off, and you could just say for all the football kids. Give them a buffer week just for the football kids. Because other people, volleyball team got a buffer week. The kids that didn't play football got buffer weeks. Cross-country kids got buffer weeks, which I don't think is necessary. But if that's what they want to do, okay, I at least understand the spirit of it. Then what about, it's only 16 teams. 16 teams times, on average, probably 50 kids.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's 800 kids. That's not right. That could easily be fixed. And that's my contention.
I don't disagree with it. I know Smith Center used to always do that. Like, he'd say, hey, in wrestling anyway, he'd be like, take the week off. They didn't hardly ever have their full team go to that tournament at Osborne to start the season that they used to do. And
some coaches get that, but there are coaches that don't.
Some that don't, yeah. And you know, wrestling's a little easier to do that, right, when you're dealing with kids
wrestling
that are individually. That I know you're still – it's a team sport, but it's individual kids that kind of take their own progression anyway throughout the season to get to where you want them to be.
Right.
And so wrestling's easier to do that than say, hey, we're not going to play basketball this week and you don't have to play on Friday. You're going to have like five people playing that – are not going to be the right kids on varsity, and it's going to be ugly if you do that in basketball, right?
Right.
So you do. I mean, basketball's a whole different animal when it comes to that part of it. It could be easily fixed. There's no question.
It's a good problem to have if you're Beloit this year. It's been a good problem to have if you've been Osborne some years Smith Center. But it's a problem that you really shouldn't have to worry about if Keishu would handle it in the right way, and that's your and I opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean we're right. It's just that we feel strongly about it. And I think there are a lot of people out there listening right now that would agree with us on that.
I know a lot of coaches that agree that have to deal with it
I think on the
winner's side.
That's the thing. We always talk about all this stuff about we want to do what the member schools want. Why isn't there a vote on all this? Why don't you vote? Why don't you take a canvas vote, have every single head football coach, every basketball coach, and every wrestling coach vote on this and say, we would like to start the season 1 week early. Just have them vote on it. I mean, I think you'd be amazed at how one-sided it'd be.
We do that, and then if you get enough of that to get the traction, then you move forward and have the actual member schools
vote on
and see what they think about it.
Right. But for some reason, that doesn't happen.
I don't know if there'd be too many schools that are like, it doesn't affect us. We don't care about it.
Yeah, maybe that's why they don't do it. Maybe they'd say
that could be part of it.
Well, and that's where you got to work as coaches and spread the word and politic a little bit to other coaches saying, hey, this could be
you next year.
Try to make
them aware,
You know, say, hey, let's do what's best for the kids here.
Yeah.
So, I just think it's, like I said, I don't blame coaches for having practice on Thanksgiving Day.
No, listen.
I would too, and I wouldn't want to. So that's the thing that really bothers me. Like, If I was a coach, I'd be like, we have to practice Thanksgiving Day. We just can't give up one day because we know Rossville's practicing as well. So we play Saturday. We've got to practice Thursday. Totally get it. But as a coach, I'd still be like, I kind of feel bad. I'm telling everybody we're practicing, even though my hands are tied here. No coach would not practice on Thanksgiving. Well, there might be a few, but when you're trying to win a state title, you don't want to disrupt your week. And that's the other thing that disrupts your week. Thanksgiving disrupts your week completely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not blaming Thanksgiving, but once again, you could avoid that.
Yeah.
I could go on forever about this because I feel passionately about it, and I know Dusty does too.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, the point is that, if you want to talk selfishly, listen, I'm not complaining about going to a game on Saturday, all right? I'll have time with family on Thursday and Friday, but I will say, would it be more ideal for me not to have to, worry about preparing for a state title game and then running to Salina on a Saturday and disrupting trying to visit my family that are 2.5 hours each opposite directions of the state? Yeah, selfishly, I could say it'd be better for me, too, if we did no title games this Saturday. And then somebody listening going, oh, well, how about you just don't do it, Wade? You don't have to do the game on the radio Saturday. No, you're right. I don't have to, and I'm not complaining that I have to. I'm happy to do a state title game. I love it. I'm just saying, would have been cool if it was November 20th.
Yeah, that was another reason why I liked 8-man being a week earlier, right? Because we have a lot of success with our 8-man teams here. So
yes,
I've covered multiple Osborne Championship games, and been down there to state, and it does. Now, luckily, I have a sister that lives in Newton, and sometimes she hosts Thanksgiving. So
fortunate.
It's like there's been times when I'm in town anyway, and I didn't have to drive anywhere. I just went across town and did the game and went back to her place after the game was over, And so, sometimes you're fortunate enough that things fall the right way for you. But, yeah, that's the biggest bummer is as parents get older, we kind of like to try to do stuff, most of our stuff there in Waukini.
Right.
And so anything like this does disrupt it, and you're kind of like, I'm glad I got to see you for these couple days here, but I got to leave.
Well, and there also is the argument, and it's just simply, is sports more important than family?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, is sports more important than family? And that's not a shot at anybody individually. It's just a question to pose. Is sports more important than family? Because I'm going to tell you something. I guarantee you there are families that have family further away than I do.
Oh, absolutely.
That might have to fly that now. Well, it's a good problem to have because we're going to state. We're happy to go to state. But, I guess we'll see you guys at Christmas. And with everything that happened with COVID-19, we know that tomorrow's not guaranteed anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we should have known that before. But so that's another thing to point out. And I've had a couple people actually have texted or emailed me and said, Why can't these games not be Thanksgiving week so people could actually relax and spend time with their family? And it does bear the question, is sports more important than family? And I'm going to tell you something. There are some people that are involved in sports that do believe sports is number one and family is well below that. And there are coaches that get it, that family is more important. It's just interesting how it's all handled. And once again, I get the practice schedules, and I would do the same thing. So don't sit here and go, well, Wade, you're going to be a hypocrite. No. Listen, if I had to play a title game on Saturday, and that's the goal all year long is to win a state title, heck yeah, I'm going to practice on Thanksgiving. I'm going to try to make it as good of a time as possible to help my kids go have family time. And I know that it won't be ideal for everybody, but I will probably, I won't lie to you. I'll pass the buck and say, this is the schedule I got to deal with. If we don't like it, let's petition Keisha about it.
Yeah, exactly. So your hands are tied. If you want to have practice, this is the day you got to do it, and that's how it's set up. I don't make the schedule.
No, exactly. I just
that's
do,
what you say as a coach.
I just play the schedule. We're happy to play a title game on Saturday, no matter when it is. So, anywho, I just think Thanksgiving. I feel like Thanksgiving is the. I had an analogy, but it might be offensive. I think Thanksgiving has become the last holiday in this country. I like Thanksgiving, and I think Thanksgiving just gets kicked to the curb. I see Christmas lights going up as soon as Halloween's over. I'm like, could we just not wait till after Thanksgiving? Now, I understand sometimes the weather's really, really nice, and you're thinking the weather might be bad, so you're going to do it when the weather's good. I get it. Sometimes people celebrate their Christmas on Thanksgiving week because that's the only time they can get together, so they put up their Christmas tree. I get that, too. I just feel like Thanksgiving is an afterthought to I don't know how to explain it. I just think Thanksgiving across the country, it's like a quick pit stop to Christmas. That's the best thing I can come up with. For me, it's not. But for some, I think it is. So, anywho, Beloit and Rossville should be an interesting game. No doubt Beloit's banged up, and they're going to have uphill climb. But let me tell you something. Did anybody think KU was going to score 57 at Texas?
No.
Did anybody think the Houston Texans are going to beat the Tennessee Titans yesterday?
No.
Did anybody see the Colts beating the Bills in Buffalo 41-15?
No.
Did anybody see Oakley going all the way to state title game last year and beat two teams, wasn't it, that they got destroyed by earlier in the year?
Yeah.
So don't sit here and tell me Beloit can't win. They can win. They need a lot of things to go their way. I'm not going to lie to you. But they can win. Yes. Anything can happen. That's why you play the game. And everybody, just when everybody thinks they have it all figured out, we usually don't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what we found out lately, that's for sure. Okay, so Beloit-Rossville, 1 o'clock on Saturday, 2A state title game in Salina. I will eat tons of turkey on Thursday, and I will run around the track wherever there is one down there to work it off before the game and be ready to go for the play-by-play broadcast at noon with pregame. The other state title games, Dusty?
Yeah, eight-man games will start. Eight-man one's at 11, Little River taking on Meade, and then eight-man division two is at 3 o'clock there in Newton. Axtell, who won 46-0 over Thunder Ridge there on Friday night and has just been very, very dominant here in the eight-man division two playoffs and all through the season, to be honest with you. They have a game against Wheatland-Grinnell. It's a rematch, actually, of week one, and Axtell beat Wheatland-Grinnell in week one 62-16. So I know Wheatland-Grinnell is a better team probably this time around. I would argue Axtell has made a lot of improvements as the season's gone along with some younger players as well, so that'll be interesting there in 8-man Division 2. Also, 1A, Olpe against Inman and Hayes, and 3A, Andale against Frontenac. That'll be in Hutchinson coming up on Saturday. 4A at Topeka, St. James Academy against Andover Central. And then in 5A, Pittsburgh, Mill Valley against Mays. And then in Class 6A, it's Derby against Blue Valley Northwest in Emporia, so those are the other games that are going on, state championship games. You can find full brackets and state football championship or playoff info. It's all posted there at ncksports.com. I think all those pages will have information on game times, football fields, places you can get tickets, things like that. It's all at ncksports.com. Just click that link to state brackets and info, and you'll have everything you need to know.
All right, look forward to it as we wind that down, and then we absolutely just flat out roll into wrestling and basketball coming up on Monday. And then, of course, we'll have basketball games. We'll leave it out next Friday on the radio, which we haven't even had a chance. We've been so busy at station to even work up a broadcast schedule for basketball yet. We're going to work on it here sometime this week, I guess. Okay, so let's shift into the Chiefs. The Chiefs yesterday knocking out the Cowboys. Wasn't a pretty game, but I tell you, that Chiefs defense got it done yesterday. 19-9 over so-called America's team.
Now they're going to go to a flip bone with Kelce, who's going to get a direct snap here. And Kelce runs an RPO. He's going to keep it, dives right into the middle of the Cowboy defense. Touchdown, Kansas City! Shades of the Super Bowl when the Chiefs do a little trickeration at the goal line. Kelce runs an RPO off a direct snap out of the flip bone formation and keeps it. And the Chiefs have a touchdown on their first drive of the game. Michael Burton in at fullback. Allegretti in as an extra tackle-over-tackle blocker. It is first down and goal to go. The Chiefs will run a reverse option pitch. They pitch it wide. Clyde Edwards-Helaire angling right. Touchdown! Kansas City on a reverse option pitch into the end zone. And the Chiefs have had touchdown, field goal, touchdown. A penalty flag thrown 5 yards deep in the end zone. Prescott lines up basically same formation. Chiefs in the same defense. Now back to Prescott. Chiefs, now the pass is over the middle, picked off by Snead. Snead now will go down wisely inside the 10-yard line. Legarius Snead will cap off a terrific night for the Chiefs defense, stifling this best NFL offense after 10 weeks. Three turnovers for the Chiefs tonight, and plus one in the giveaway-takeaway ratio. Legarius Snead with the interception.
So the Chiefs do win 19-9 yesterday over the Dallas Cowboys. I know the Cowboys will have all kinds of excuses. I've already heard them. That's fine. You can use your excuses all you want. Injuries are part of football, all right? We can use all kinds of excuses that the Chiefs shouldn't have lost the Super Bowl last year without their right and left tackle. But that's part of it. I mean, staying healthy is part of winning in any sport, whether it's bad luck or good luck. It is what it is. You can be upset about it. Now, the Cowboys, I will say, in fairness to them, they're going to play 3 games in 12 days, and they're banged up pretty badly. Yeah. And now Lamb's out for the next game, too. So, and we're sitting here talking about 3 games in 10 days for high school kids that used to do. 3 kids in 12 days for NFL players is irresponsible. It is. It's irresponsible. These guys are trained. I mean, these are train wrecks that they have every day in football, every play. And sometimes you got to think about the safety of the players, and the union somehow allowed this to happen. I mean, 3 games in 12 days, I don't care if it's the Cowboys, the Chiefs, or whoever, that's just ridiculous. And what kind of a lingering effect will it have after the 3 games in 12 days? Because the Cowboys play Thanksgiving Day, and I know that's a holiday thing and everything, but Cowboys want to be on Thanksgiving Day, but I don't know if the players voted on it, I don't know if they'd be all for that.
Yeah,
but the players don't get a vote.
Yeah, what you would ideally like is if you could get the NFL to agree, like have the Lions and Cowboys have their bye before the Thanksgiving game.
Absolutely,
right. Like let them play on Sunday or Monday the week before, have a bye, and then go into Thursday Thanksgiving.
Agreed.
I don't think that would be that hard.
I don't think they would
complain about having the same bye week every year either.
I don't think so either. No, I agree with
you. To avoid a situation like this.
I agree with you. The Cowboys without Amari Cooper, that was a COVID-19 thing. Chiefs have caught some breaks here. Rodgers is out because of COVID-19, not Cooper. So I start to wonder about karma, like when's Mahomes going to get it? Because there's going to be something, right? There's going to be a Chiefs player that's going to have to deal with it. Or maybe the Chiefs are better at hiding it. I don't know how it all works. I really don't.
Yeah.
But they caught a break with Cooper not playing. And then Lamb, listen, I'll listen to the excuse about Cooper being out changes what the Cowboys do offensively. There's no question because you can double Lamb. I will not buy the excuse, well, we lost the game because Lamb got a concussion right before halftime. You scored 3 points with him.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not going to buy that argument. Your tackle's out. Well, the Chiefs are on their third string right tackle. So I'm gonna sit here and tell you that I'm not going to buy the Tyron Smith, oh, he's out left tackle. That hurt us so much. Wah. The Chiefs are missing their right tackle. They're missing their backup right tackle. So, okay. I'm not going to buy that one, but I will listen to the Cooper COVID, no doubt, because it happened later in the week. So your game plan, you didn't have as much time to prepare. I'll listen to that. And the Chiefs do get the win. The story, of course, is the Chiefs' defense. It was outstanding yesterday. Cowboy fans will say, yeah, but we weren't at full strength. It's a fair point, no doubt. If you're objective, if you can objectively, Chiefs fans, if you can be objective, Cowboy fans, if you can be objective, Yes, there's no doubt. I mean, come on, let's be honest. If the Chiefs lost to the Cowboys yesterday and Tyreek Hill didn't play, what do you think Chiefs fans would say?
Tyreek Hill didn't play.
Well, Tyreek Hill didn't play. No wonder they did so well against us with their defense.
The way what we could have done offensively.
Exactly, and that would be a fair point as well. Here's Andy on the on his thoughts on the defense that was fantastic yesterday.
Defensively, what a game! What a game! I mean, that's the number one offense in the National Football League, and I just thought our defense brought it every snap. Against, in particular, our defensive line, in particular against a heck of an offensive line. So I'm proud of the guys for that. I could probably go through all of them. They all did a nice job.
No doubt. The defense is awesome. There was a scare before the game, Tyrann Mathieu. They were saying maybe wouldn't be active. And you're like, oh, no. He had some swelling when he woke up yesterday out of bed in his knee, but he was able to go.
He played well. You know, he had surgery on that knee at one time, and his knee swelled up overnight, which is a little unusual. But it's done that in the off season; it hadn't done it during the season. But you know, my hat goes off to him letting us know when he got up and getting in here and getting treatment done, and then wanting to play. That's the next thing. I mean, he was in here for hours getting treatment. So. You know, that kid he's an amazing kid. And, you know, the fact that he was out there doing what he did was likewise amazing.
No doubt. You need him out there. He's the captain of this defense. And that's why it'll be interesting to see what the Chiefs do, you know, this offseason if they sign him to an extension, let him be a free agent. I think they're somehow going to work something out. I still don't know if it's a wise thing to do long term myself. And I love Tyrann Mathieu. I really do. But I just think there's too much tied up in other players, unfortunately. Speaking of that, Chris Jones was fantastic yesterday. 3.5 sacks. He had a forced fumble, fumble recovery, tipped the pass on the interception, sealed it for Snead. Matthew Derrick told us a few weeks ago, he said, Frank Clark and Chris Jones, they need to get healthy. If they can get healthy, he goes, that should help the pass rush. Acquiring Melvin Ingram has changed this team.
And Willie Gay getting healthy.
Yes, that's
helped
a ton.
Those two things are making this defense so dang fast.
I agree. I agree. And I still don't understand why in the final minutes, Neiman and Sorensen on the field and Gay is not. But whatever. Yeah, the speed is just absolutely apparent. With Bolton and Gay, they're just a different defense when those two are both out there. Thornhill's obviously improved over Sorensen. They were stubborn and waited a while for that. But the biggest move was getting Melvin Ingram, who can – here's the thing that's really great about Melvin Ingram. He can play the run and he can rush the passer. Yeah. He's a complete player. And no, he didn't get a sack yesterday, and maybe he didn't get tons of pass pressure. But with him being at a defensive end, you've got a guy that can defend the run, can get pressure off the edge. And the biggest reason that the acquisition of Melvin Ingram is so big is it gives the Chiefs the flexibility to move Chris Jones inside. And we've said all year Chris Jones should be playing D-tack on that D-end. And one of the reasons why he's playing D-end is the Chiefs didn't address their other D-end position for the most part. And then, of course, Frank Clark, he had some injury problems, so that didn't help either. And now with Ingram and a healthy Clark, and you got Ingram, now you got Jones inside. And the other thing that I noticed, too, is now they can rotate guys around Chris Jones in the middle of that defense that are fresher and doing a better job against the run. So I think it's a trickle-down effect, and I think it starts with Melvin Ingram allowing Chris Jones to play inside. That's my feeling on it. Andy Reid, is this a statement win beating the Cowboys?
Every week is like crazy in this league, so I'm not sure there are any statement. There's not a lot of consistency going on right now, you know, amongst the NFL here. So, I mean, every week is a big-time challenge. And I'm talking about wins and losses are consistent. You know, there's these ups and downs, and teams are favored, and then they get beat. I mean, it's crazy. So it's what the league strived for, parity in this league. And I think they've done a great job with that. Every town, every city has an opportunity to win football games. That's a great thing. And we're no different. So we've got to just keep our nose to it and bear down as we go, take each game as it comes. You know, we haven't proven anything yet. You can talk about all of it after the season. Go find an island and go lay around and tell everybody about it. But right now, not so much, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good win, but I don't think it's a statement win, especially when the Cowboys aren't, you know, at full strength. I think it's a really good win, but I don't think it's a statement win. A statement win would have been the Cowboys winning. That would have been a statement win. Chris Jones on the reason for his big day.
Give it to the back end and the guys around me. The guys around me, Frank Clark started it off with a sack. So they start sliding to Frank Clark and giving me the one-on-ones. And the back end, you watch the back end, how tight they was playing in coverage. Took his first option away, which forces him to hold the ball a second or two longer. And, you know, I was really able to make some plays.
Yeah, what's Mr. Mahomes think about this defense that's really improved?
I mean, ever since pretty much the second half of the Tennessee game, those guys have been playing better. It got lost because the offense wasn't playing very well, that we were winning games because of the defense, and so people are so used to our offense kind of going out there and putting up these numbers. But I would say it every week when I was right here at the podium, like, don't lose how good our defense is playing. And to go up against an offense like that, that has put up so many yards, so many scores and touchdowns, and then to shut it down, I mean, that's impressive. And so for us as an offense, when you get in these kind of funks that we kind of did in that second half, we know if we just can just grind it out, get field goals, try to find a way to get a touchdown, then we're going to win the football game.
You know what that win reminded me of yesterday? I was watching the game, and as it was continuing to progress, I was sitting here thinking, Mahomes has always had to carry this team. And now today, he just doesn't have – he can be a game manager because his defense is playing so well. And I was like, this is Tom Brady and the Patriots when they had good defenses winning Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, Brady won games like this quite a bit.
Absolutely.
Brady didn't score 40 every
early
game.
In his career. This especially. Is definitely what it was.
Yeah, that was the formula. Good special teams, which the Chiefs' special teams was pretty good. Yes, I know Butker missed extra point. He missed a 51-yarder. Dude, he made 53-yarder. You can't make every 50-yarder. The extra point was his first miss this year from extra point land, and it was windy. So I'm not going to get worried about that right now. You know, Townsend's been a good punter, and then the Butker pooch kick was perfectly executed. Mm-hmm. Kick returns were good with Pringle and Hughes, especially Pringle. I mean, it was a complimentary effort. And then the offense got a great first drive, and then they had the drive at the end that ate a ton of time off the clock, which was huge, despite Mahomes making a bad two decisions. Mahomes on RPO decided to throw the ball first down instead of running it. That should have been an automatic run. Mm-hmm. I will agree with Troy Aikman. I didn't think Aikman was great yesterday, but I will agree on one thing he said. He goes, sometimes I start to wonder if quarterbacks have too much leeway. Because if I'm Andy Reid, I'm telling him in the headset, or Bieniemy, I'm going, dude, I know it's RPO, but run it.
Yeah.
And he threw it, and then that killed the clock, and then luckily got a first down eventually after it. And then the other one, why not pitch at the Allaire? I mean, I don't know what Mahomes was doing on that play. Yeah. That lost you nine not to where overly, you had to punt it.
Wasn't an overly big fan of the option play call
no,
on
I don't
that
like
play
that
either,
call
to be
either.
Completely honest with you. I mean, if you're going to run, just run. Like, if you want to get clock off. And
just toss sweep. Like this, toss sweep.
Sweep,
yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to run outside, not speed option, I don't think is the thing you're doing with Patrick Mahomes right there. But that's just me.
Yeah. The other thing about that play that brings a sideline in the play where you could go out
exactly,
of bounds.
Yeah.
That's the other reason I don't like it. But anyway, if it worked, everybody's so like, oh, you would have loved the play if it worked. That's true. Probably so. It did work for a touchdown. But Mahomes doesn't look comfortable running option, that's for sure.
No.
Here's Reed on the highlights for offensive special teams.
Offensively, we had some ups and downs. Started off right. Had a couple nice drives. And actually, the one that was great was the last drive where we had to chew some time up. Get them to use their timeouts, even though we didn't score on it. It put them in a big-time bind. And then Tobe had the pooch kick, and Bucker did a nice job with it of getting it down there. And very seldom do you see a punter covering and an offensive guard covering, but we practice it every week, and, you know, that's how you practice it right there. They executed it perfect. So,
well, as Andy alluded to, that final drive of the Chiefs offense did eat a lot of clock. And here's Mahomes on finishing games.
I made the one bad decision, kind of trying to make the throw to Pringle there. They played it well. But other than that, I thought we ran the ball well when we needed to run the ball and made plays happen. And at the end of games, it comes down to that. When the defense is playing like they're playing, to grind out drives at the end of games to kind of kill the clock down, those are big drives that you'll need at the end of the year.
That's true. And that's complimentary football. It might not be as sexy as scoring 54, but I'd rather win 19-9 than lose 54-51 to the Rams on a Monday night, which happened in 2018. I'm okay with it. I think the Chiefs fans are a little bit spoiled. Even when they win, they kind of complain a little bit. And it's like, dude, you don't complain when you keep winning. They're 7-4 now. There's only one team in the AFC has more wins than the Chiefs. That's the Titans. The Chiefs are only one game out of the number one seed in home field advantage in the playoffs. Can you believe that? They've now surpassed Buffalo, who they don't have the tiebreaker with. The Ravens are only half a game ahead of them. And the Ravens, boy, the Bears blew that yesterday. 3rd and 12, I mean, they had the Ravens beat. And then
how many
coverage.
Times are they going to win games like that, Baltimore?
The Ravens, the Ravens are four plays away from being 3-7. Literally, they are. I mean, it's unbelievable. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire was back yesterday. A little bit more burst out of the backfield. I like that. I still think Andy Reid and this team could run the ball more. I think Andy still does. I mean, you looked yesterday. It was 33 passes, 17 runs. I think the Chiefs could have ran the ball a little bit more. And if you're worried about wearing out Helaire with his first game back, then Williams could have got a few more carries. He hardly carried the ball. I still think that's something that Andy just never fully commits to. But usually he will more so, of course, when his defense is playing really well. Here's the thing about the Chiefs right now, and this is what makes them scary. They've won four in a row, and only one of those games can you say they played a collective full game as a team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. The Giants offensively wasn't very good. The Packer game offense was not very good. And then the Raider game was great for everybody around. And then this game, the offense was good in spurts.
Yeah.
Special teams was pretty solid. Defense was outstanding. The defense is getting better, and they're staying healthy. Although Fenton got hurt yesterday, and that could hurt them a little bit in the secondary. And special teams have been really good this year. And the offense, I'll tell you, this is why this team is scary. If the offense figures it out consistently, which obviously they didn't really have it figured out yesterday, but they did against the Raiders, man alive. And here's the other thing. Got a couple guys banged up like everybody does. You get a bye week, and you're 7-4. It's a good time to go into the bye after having to play the Packers, Raiders, and Cowboys.
I'm excited about it because we're still not playing our best football, and we're sitting here 7-4, at least a half game up on the AFC West, and you go into the bye week knowing you're going to play a lot of divisional opponents coming up. So everything's right in front of us. We can be better, especially offensively. The defense can continue to get better and better each and every week. And to be where we started, to where we're at now, and still not even playing our best football, I would take that every time.
Any complaints or concerns with the Chiefs' performance yesterday, Mr. Dynas?
I wouldn't say concerns. It's just the normal things that you're kind of looking at with the Chiefs is, you know, efficiency. You know, like what Andy Reid was saying, nobody's really consistent right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying that in wins and losses, but that's also true for the entire team for the Chiefs. The defense is playing really well over the last four games, whatever it is.
Right.
And that's it's crazy to me that they're on a four-game winning streak basically because of the defense right now.
Yes, right.
And so that's what's crazy about it for me. And so, you know, usually your concerns would be on that side of the ball, but right now they're playing really well. I don't get overly concerned about the offense having long stretches and like, you know, like 5, 6, 7, 8 games in a row where they're just not good. Like,
right.
that doesn't concern me a whole lot about this team. And so, no, I mean, you know, there's things that always happen in these games. And like you said, Chiefs fans are kind of spoiled, so they can – some of them can come up with concerns or something to whine and complain about. But, you know, really, I don't have any major things that come to my mind that are like, hey, we need to do something different here.
I don't either. And they've also won these last few games with a third-string right tackle.
Yeah.
You get Niang back or Rimmers, that'll be an improvement there. At least it should be. The Chiefs defense gave up 276 yards yesterday. That's really good, but it's really exaggerated because of Dallas's last drive of the game. I mean, the Chiefs basically held Dallas to 200 yards of offense. That's impressive. The Cowboys only ran the ball for 82 yards. Is there a more overrated – okay, let me back up. We know OBJ. Let me revise this. After Odell Beckham Jr., is there a more overrated player in this league than Ezekiel Elliott?
It's hard to find one.
Dude, I'm watching this game, and Elliott got hurt, and the broadcast crew acts like that's a big loss. I immediately go, that's not good for the Chiefs. I'm more worried about Pollard.
Pollard's been better.
Pollard's
than
a better
him for sure.
Pollard's a lot at least he's a lot quicker. He reads the holes better. He's got a burst that Elliott I don't think has anymore. Elliott's not really great out of the backfield catching the ball. Pollard is a lot better at that. I think Ezekiel Elliott is a shell of himself. When he first came in the league, I think he's extremely overrated. I think, obviously, the Cowboys are way overpaying. And I will, in defense of Ezekiel Elliott, he's had some injuries, which will slow you down as a running back.
Absolutely, it will.
But Pollard was much more of a threat, and I knew that going into the game, and then that was proven true during the game. And I'll be honest, the Cowboys should have used Pollard a little bit more in their offense.
Yeah, and I feel like there's sometimes – I don't know if it's like because the injuries like you talked about or something, but it just doesn't seem like Zeke is trying to finish plays like he used to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'll get stood up, and it's like, okay, I'm done. I'm out. And it's like, not every play. I'm not saying he doesn't still run with power sometimes. But
right. He did against Fenton. You
know, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's still those plays in those games, but it seems like when he gets, you know, when it's over for him, he's not trying to get that extra effort at the end of the play when he's, you know, maybe getting pushed out of bounds or pushed backwards.
Right.
But, again, I mean, a lot of that – has to do with how they're defending him as well. But that's just he's again, like you said, a shell of himself. But he's definitely not what he was.
Not at all.
The first couple years of his career.
No doubt.
Yesterday, Mahomes' line, 23 of 37 for 260. No touchdowns, one interception, and that was because Kelce dropped it, although it was a little bit behind him, but it's still a play that Kelce knew he should have had. So Mahomes threw 11 picks, and I would say I think four or five are drops by his all-pro receivers.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. But I will take Mahomes going 23 of 37 for 260 and no touchdowns if the Chiefs keep winning. I'll take it. I'm okay with it. Really am.
Yeah.
I love that Mahomes is broken. Going into the game yesterday, he was second in league in passing yardage, second in league in touchdowns, and he was AFC Player of the Week. You know, I think it should be a new episode ESPN puts together, a new series. They should just make it a game show or something. Who is the broken quarterback this week? Like, it was Mahomes. Well, clearly he's fixed, but he never was broken, but whatever, Ryan Clark. And then Brady, I think, must be broken right now based on how he's played the last two games. Mm-hmm. If he plays bad tonight, he's definitely broken, right? But what
should
about
just
what
retire if he plays bad
he should
tonight.
Retire. Yeah, he's washed up. What about Josh Allen? Is he broken?
Yeah, I think he is.
I don't think so, but
no,
that's
not
where we're going here. Yeah, is exactly. The Chiefs will be they have a bye this week, which is perfect. They get to enjoy Thanksgiving. See high school football teams have to worry about playing a game Saturday. The Kansas City Chiefs don't.
Yeah.
But that's a good thing that you're playing in the game Saturday because you're in the state title game. Okay, so the games, the Eagles beat the Saints 40-29. Eagles are coming on. Dolphins beat the Jets 24-17. Washington football team beat Cam Newton and the Panthers 27-21. Colts destroyed the Bills 41-15. Ever since the Bills beat the Chiefs, they have not been the same team. The Browns squeaked by the Lions 13-10. Lions are 0-9-1. 49ers destroyed the Jaguars 30-10. Texans, the shocker of the day, beat the Titans. Oh, Tony Dungy last week. Well, I think the Titans are the best team because they haven't stripped up against anybody. And right away I'm like, dude, they lost to the Jets. And this week everybody's like, how can the Titans go 7-0 against playoff teams and they're 0-2 against the Jets and the Texans? And the Titans game was at home yesterday.
Yeah.
And they got beat by the Texans, who had lost 8 games in a row. 22-13. Tyrod Taylor and the Texans go to Tennessee and win by 2 scores. I can't explain it. I really can't. That's unbelievable to me. That's, to me, complete letdown and lack of focus. And that goes to your coaching staff and then, of course, your leaders on the team. It just goes to show you got to be ready to play every week in this
Absolutely,
league.
Absolutely, you do. It's in any professional league, to be honest. You but just especially be ready to go out in the NFL. Your standing can change from first to fifth or sixth if with one bad week, the way this AFC is looking right now.
Oh,
so, yeah, you do. You got to be focused.
Yeah, right now the Chiefs would be the number 4 seed, but the Patriots are the 2 seed at 7-3. The Ravens are 7-3, and then the number 1 seed's the Titans at 8-3. The Chiefs are only one game out of the number 1 seed for home field advantage in the playoffs. And the Patriots have a fairly easy schedule, except they play the Bills twice in 4 weeks. But the Patriots might end up winning the division. The point being is the Chiefs are close to getting to the Ravens now and then eventually exceeding them because they need to, because they don't have the tiebreaker head-to-head against the Ravens. Mm-hmm. But they've already passed the Bills, one of those teams they lost to earlier this year. So, and if the Bills don't win their division, it doesn't matter what the record is for the Bills versus the Chiefs, because the Bills will be a wild card team. It's just very interesting how it's all playing out. The Vikings beat the Packers yesterday on the last second field goal, 34-31. The Vikings are 5-5. They could easily be 8-2. They could be the antithesis of the Ravens. They could be the ones making all those plays. They did yesterday. So the Packers now drop to the number 2 seed in the NFC. The Ravens beat the Bears 16-13 on a 3rd-and-12 with 29 seconds to go to keep the drive alive. Unbelievable breakdown by the Bears defense. No Lamar Jackson, out with an illness, but it wasn't COVID. Bengals waxed the Raiders 32-13. The Raiders in disarray. It seems like we talk about this every year. Raiders get off to a good start, and then they fall apart. The Cardinals without Kyler Murray for the third straight game. They're 2-1 without him. Colt McCoy's done a nice job. They beat the Seahawks 23-13. Cardinals, number 1 seed in the NFC. They're 9-2, and the Seahawks are 3-7. Holy shnikes. I had the Seahawks in the playoffs, so that one doesn't look good.
Yeah, I did too.
Chiefs beat the Cowboys 19-9. Chiefs 7-4. The Cowboys dropped to 7-3. And a great game last night, Sunday Night Football. The Chargers blew a 17-point lead. We're down 37-34. I'm like, yay, that helps the Chiefs. And then Herbert went down the field, and they scored a touchdown and win 41-37. So the Steelers now 5-4-1. Chargers 6-4, half game behind the Chiefs. The Broncos and the Rams had byes. Of course, there'll be three games on Thanksgiving Day. Coming up this Thanksgiving on Thursday, all 6 of the teams involved in that game on Thursday, those 6 teams are going to play on Thursday. Mm-hmm. They all lost yesterday. every one of the teams playing on Thanksgiving Day lost yesterday.
It's bounce back week, right?
That's right. Now, Thanksgiving Day, turkey.
Thursday.
Turkey leg bounce back. Buccaneers tonight host the Giants. If Eli Manning comes out of retirement, Brady is done. They ain't going to win that game. But that's Giants at the Buccaneers. Buccaneers 4-0 at home, and that game is at home tonight. All right, college football. You know, KU lost, but if you're a KU fan, you still got to feel pretty doggone good. I mean, they were down a couple scores, came back and tied it. I mean, they haven't shown they can come back against anybody this year. Jalen Daniels appears to be, you know, the guy that's going to lead this team in the next few years. And then there's the folk hero, Plainville's Jared Casey.
Bostic has lined up tight to the right. They lob to the end zone. It's Casey! He caught it again! Last week, a two-point conversion. This week, a touchdown. The legend continues for the mighty Casey.
It did. That tied the game at 28, but unfortunately, TCU had time and a chance to win it.
Griffin Kell, 25 yards out. It's up and good! TCU has the lead. 6 seconds on the clock.
TCU wins at 31-28. Devin Neal got hurt. He didn't play the second half. That's their number one running back. That certainly affected them, but they still came back despite that. That's another reason why I think you could say that there's progress being made at KU. Here's Lance Leipold on Jalen Daniels. They burned the red shirt, but he's still got 2 years eligibility. Could get a third year because of COVID-19 being on the roster last year, so it's really not that big a deal that they burned it. And here's Leipold on Daniels' play against TCU.
I think he didn't start the way he wanted to, but once he got in the rhythm, I thought he made some really clutch throws. Probably the one that he wished he had back, obviously, was the interception, but I thought he played really well again today. I didn't really glance at 22 for 30. Those are pretty good numbers, back-to-back weeks. And, again, especially when we were down the way we were, two scores, and giving up 21 straight for him to lead us the way he did and strike quickly is something that we haven't done a lot of this year.
That is true, and that's why that shows progress. Here's Leipold on the KU defense.
I was very pleased, especially our short yardage run game was excellent. I thought we played good goal line defense tonight. A lot of guys, we played physical and, you know, within the box as well as we have probably. The big plays were on the perimeter that they were able to hit on us. That's a credit to them. You know, really need to take my hat off to Jerry Kill for the job that he's doing under a difficult situation, getting a team to continue to perform like that. And you can see his influence as well about being a physical offensive football team. And I'm proud of our team of where we're at this stage. And even though we came up a little short here tonight.
KU's now 2-9 overall, and they have a game coming up. It'll be their senior day, their final home game of the year. Saturday evening, they will host West Virginia. West Virginia has been a Jekyll and Hyde team this year. Here's a pretty crazy thing. If KU and K-State win this weekend, because K-State's at Texas on Friday at 11 a.m., if KU beats West Virginia Saturday night and K-State beats Texas Friday morning, Texas Longhorn football will finish last in the Big 12. Can you believe that? KU would have the tiebreaker over Texas. And so KU would not finish last. It would be Texas. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? That is indeed crazy stuff. Texas, hey, we want to go to the SEC. Cash in on all that money. Well, enjoy all that money. If you're finishing last in the Big 12 and you can't beat Kansas, how are you going to beat Vanderbilt, let alone Alabama and the SEC? So interesting stuff. But KU does fall 31-28. But there's no doubt. And I think all along, KU fans, I think for the most part, have felt that Lance Leipold, they're going to give him a chance and that he is probably the best guy that KU has hired the last three or four coaches that they have hired. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And after the circus of Jeff Long and Les Miles, there's some stability now. And I think there is momentum for this KU football program. Now, whether or not they win against West Virginia on Saturday or not, there is some momentum. And it's hard to believe you'd say that about a team that's 2-9, but that's how bad KU football's been, that a team that's now 2-9, you go, wow, there's hope. It's crazy, but it's true. K-State, they lost to Baylor on senior day. 20-10 was the final. K-State now 7-4 and 4-4 in the Big 12. That ends their four-game winning streak as the only bright spot for K-State offensively was you-know-who.
Back on the field, And they start with Deuce Vaughn. Big hole for Vaughn. High stepping into Baylor territory. And you can kiss Deuce Vaughn goodbye. Touchdown, K-State. 65 yards from Deuce Vaughn.
When Deuce touched the ball, K-State did some good things offensively. Unfortunately, he didn't touch the ball as much as he needed to, because K-State did nothing, virtually nothing offensively without Deuce touching the ball. Deuce with a 65-yard touchdown run. The only touchdown of the night for the K-State offense. Chris Kleiman on Baylor's pass defense.
They did a lot of different things. They played really tight man coverage, and they do a good job of rerouting and banging guys around and knocking them off, disrupting the timing of things, and then they pass things off in zone really well. And then they do a great job of coming hard at a quarterback, whether they're rushing four or five or sometimes six. I thought they do a really good job of knocking Skyler off his spot and making him ad lib either up in the pocket or outside, and it was a problem obviously all day.
Skylar Thompson did leave the game due to injury. They want to save Will Howard's red shirt, at least for the time being. So Jaron Lewis came in, promptly threw a pick, and that pretty much killed any chances of K-State winning. There are some people that are – I think it's a fair point. You know, that game was still in the balance. You could have still won the game. So you're worried about Will Howard saving him, then you probably have to play him this week anyway. Or you're not going to play him this week and just not beat Texas when you have an opportunity. It is it's a conundrum that Chris Kleiman has right now, because – you know, the plan wasn't to redshirt Will Howard once Thompson got hurt earlier in the year. But then all of a sudden, Thompson came back kind of unexpectedly. And next thing you know, he's like, wait a minute. It kind of hit him a few weeks ago. We could save a year of eligibility for Will Howard. So how does K-State go about handling this now? Because we don't know the extent of the injury to Skylar Thompson. Here's Coach Kleiman on Skylar and the struggles on offense.
Well, I don't know anything about his injury right now. We all need to probably play a little bit better on offense. We need to have a better plan on offense. I don't think our plan was great.
Didn't think the plan was great and didn't work out, that's for sure. So I don't know if you've heard anything new with Skyler's injury, but what do you anticipate? I mean, it's a short week, too. You got to travel. You go to Texas. You play the Longhorns in Austin at 11 a.m. And as I said earlier, you just missed it because you had to go record. But K-State wins over Texas, and KU beats West Virginia. Texas finishes last in the Big 12. Don't let him off the hook, K-State. Play Will Howard.
Darn it.
If you've got to.
Yeah, and I...
not saying Will Howard's going to mean it's a win. I'm just saying you're better off than Jaron Lewis. But you got with Will Howard.
Yeah, and I don't know if he will have a change of heart after thinking about it throughout the week here. Well, the short week, like you said. But in theory, it's like if he didn't play him against
Baylor,
why would he play him against Texas? Because right. There's nothing really hanging in the balance for K-State other than maybe a little better bowl game. But, I mean, that kind of... I think K-State's going to Memphis with the loss to Baylor, no matter what they do to with Texas.
Liberty Bowl?
I feel like that's kind of where they've been projected here, and they're not. We've seen here in the recent past they're not getting any favors from these bowl games in the conference to maybe place them a little bit higher in a different spot than what they're slotted to be in. Listen, if you're fully committed to redshirting Will Howard, you don't play him this weekend.
I agree.
There's nothing that needs to come out of this game from the aspect of, oh, I have to go win. You know,
but it's Texas, man.
You want to beat Texas, and absolutely. And
after what they did to you last year,
and it would be cool to see them finish last place in the Big 12 if KU could beat West Virginia. But you know, I just don't feel like you're going to go out there and start Will Howard this weekend if that's your plan. If you've actually come up with a plan here recently that says, hey, you're going to be based off of one game, because Skyler might be healthy, you know, to play in a bowl game. Now if Skyler's not healthy to play in the bowl game, I think there might be a little bit different thought process there.
Right, but there's no way for them to
know. We don't know that right yet. Now. And it sounds like he'll probably, I would guess, Kleiman will know by tomorrow at the media press conference this week that I feel like he'll probably have an update, and we'll know a lot more coming up tomorrow about where K-State stands.
They play Friday.
Again, they play Friday, yeah. So, but it might be a little bit different thought process if Skyler can't play in the bowl game. So I want to kind of wait and see what that's happening, what's happening there.
Yeah,
there's so many people already. They're like, Jake Grubley should start on Friday. And I'm like, no, he shouldn't. Absolutely not. Jaron Lewis should start on Friday if Will Howard can't.
Agreed.
Or if they don't want to play him.
Agreed. So K-State now 7-4, 4-4 in the Big 12. Big 12 wrap run over the weekend. Oklahoma, an exciting game. They won there in the final seconds with an interception. Brock Purdy just makes some dumb decisions. That's all I got to say. Like that quarterback, he's got talent, but he makes some really boneheaded plays. Fumbles the ball before halftime, touchdown for OU. I don't know what he was trying to do on that play. And then the pass that he threw, that got intercepted. The guy was wide open over the middle, fourth down, and he just flat out overthrew him. Oklahoma beat Iowa State 28-21. West Virginia beat Texas 31-23. TCU, as we mentioned, beat KU. And Oklahoma State's, their defense is just phenomenal, man. They shut out Texas Tech 23-0. So the game's this weekend, Friday. That's right, K-State plays at Texas Friday at 11 a.m. on Fox. TCU at Iowa State at 3:30 on FS1. And then Texas Tech at Baylor, West Virginia at KU, and Oklahoma at Oklahoma State. Here's a scenario for the Big 12 championship. Oklahoma State has punched their ticket. Mm-hmm. Now, how weird is this? So it's Bedlam, part one. Oklahoma at Oklahoma State, 6:30 at Stillwater on ABC primetime. Oklahoma State's clinched the spot in the Big 12 title game. If Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma, Oklahoma is eliminated as long as Baylor beats Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
So Oklahoma is eliminated. Oklahoma State then would play Baylor in the Big 12 title game. If Oklahoma beats Oklahoma State in Stillwater, they'll play again a week after in the Big 12 title game in a rematch. And OU would still have a chance to win their seventh.
This time.
They go neutral down in Dallas. So if you're tired of Oklahoma winning the championship, you want Oklahoma State to just knock them out now. But Oklahoma State could, in essence, have two chances to stop the conference winning streak for Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm sitting here going, you better do it at home. That's just my opinion. So yeah. Oklahoma State, and they also got a chance to make college football playoffs. So Oklahoma State's got still plenty to play for. There's no doubt about that. And I tell you, the way Oklahoma's playing on offense and with Caleb Williams and he didn't play that well the other day. They ran the ball pretty well. They got a defensive touchdown. And you look at Oklahoma State's defense, and that place will be rocking, and it'll be at home. I have a hard time. I usually am like, Oklahoma's always got Oklahoma State's number. I just don't think this is a good matchup for Oklahoma. So I'm going to say Oklahoma State does win this game, and it's going to be Baylor, Oklahoma State in the Big 12 title game. Now watch what will happen. I have to check this. If Oklahoma would lose, let me see here. If Oklahoma would lose, that'd be their second conference loss. Mm-hmm. Baylor has two losses. So, yeah, if Baylor loses it. So watch Baylor lose to Texas Tech at home, and Oklahoma will backdoor their way in.
Still a chance to rematch, yeah.
Wouldn't that be something? Because Baylor game will be played. What time will that game be played? Yeah, my thing messed up here. What time is that case? Yeah, Baylor game. Come on. There we go. Oh, 11 a.m. So Oklahoma is going to know. Like, it's possible Oklahoma State, there's nothing on the line other than college football playoff and nothing to do with the conference title game if Baylor loses to Texas Tech, which I don't think is going to happen. But
I don't either.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see if Oklahoma State and Baylor both win, how fast Spencer Rattler's name goes into the transfer portal after this.
Yeah.
He ain't sticking around for a bowl game if he's leaving.
He shouldn't. And I don't blame him. No. Transfers. What's the point? Nebraska, they lose another close game. Well, that's, it's just, seriously, is this Groundhog Day again? Yes, it is. Nebraska's 3-8. They lose 35-28 to Wisconsin. 8th straight loss to the Badgers. They'll be hosting Iowa on Friday. Iowa's ranked 17th. Iowa's 9-2. Nebraska's 3-8. The game's at 12:30 at Memorial Stadium, and the Huskers are a 3.5-point favorite. Can you believe that?
Wow. I can't.
That's a lot of respect for a 3-8 team. Here's Scott Frost on a loss to Wisconsin, which the game started off with the outstanding special teams play in Nebraska, giving up a 91-yard kickoff return to start the game. Right off the bat, they were climbing uphill.
We played a really good football team tonight. Wisconsin's good in all three phases. You can't start a game with a kick return. You know, that they're 7 points right there, and we lost by seven. You know, they're good in the run game. But we gave up too many big plays in the run game. Just missed tackles, I thought. And we shot ourselves in the foot on a couple offensive drives with penalties. And it's happened too much. We need to get it fixed. We're going to get it fixed. We keep putting ourselves in position against really good teams. We got to get it done.
Now, Nebraska, they were able to drive the field, had a chance to tie the game. They had a 4th-and-20 from the 21. And there was no doubt pass interference, and it wasn't called. They swallowed the whistle, and it was at Wisconsin. Nebraska's not going to get that whistle. Scott Frost was irate and livid, and he should have been. It was pass interference. At the same time, I would say, Nebraska shouldn't have put themselves in a position where the ref makes the call because, one, they had a holding penalty before that, and Martinez threw a couple picks, and you gave up a 91-yard kick return for a score, and you couldn't stop Austin Allen, Braylon Allen.
Braylon Allen for Wisconsin. He had 228 yards rushing and three touchdowns. So that's the reason he lost, not the official, but that was a missed call, no doubt about it. Adrian Martinez, 23 of 35 for 351 yards, season high. But he did throw two picks, but he kept him in it. You know how that works. He makes a play, he doesn't make a play. And Nebraska's used to it. And number 19, Wisconsin wins by a final of 35-28. College football top 25 from this week, as the college football playoff show will be a little bit more intriguing coming up tomorrow night. As we can tell you, I'm going to skip over all the SEC games for the most part because they didn't play anybody this week. So the big game, Ohio State over Michigan State, it was 49-0 at halftime. 56-7. The quarterback of Ohio State, C.J. Stroud, threw six touchdowns in the first half. And Michigan State was talking about giving $95 million to a head coach. Maybe you should put a hold on that. Clemson beat Wake Forest 48-27. So Wake Forest eliminated from playoff contention. Oklahoma, as we mentioned, got by Iowa State. Let's see. I'm skipping all this SEC schools. Iowa beat Illinois 33-21. Notre Dame pasted Georgia Tech 55-0. Cincinnati rolled SMU 48-14. Alabama beat Arkansas 42-35. Excuse me. Alabama beat Arkansas 42-35. I put on Twitter, Alabama rolls Arkansas 42-35, and Cincinnati struggles to get by SMU 48-14. I said, at least that's how the playoff committee will probably see it. Yeah.
Oh, they won big, but it's just SMU.
That's right.
It doesn't.
Even though they're 8-2 coming
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
Michigan destroyed Maryland 59-18. Michigan, Ohio State, everybody's pumping this matchup up. Come on, people. Jim Harbaugh can't beat Ohio State, and it's not going to happen this weekend either. BYU beat Georgia Southern 34-17, and Utah destroyed Oregon, which some people kind of saw coming, 38-7. Oregon was number three. They won't be number three anymore. And Oklahoma State beat Texas Tech, we mentioned 23-0. So the new playoff, it's going to be Georgia number one. I would argue Ohio State should jump to two.
Yeah,
over Alabama.
I
mean, that's a marquee win, and Alabama's got the worst loss of the two. So I would put Ohio State and jump all the way up to two, and Oregon goes bye-bye. And then who's number three is probably Alabama.
Alabama, yeah.
And then number four should be Cincinnati.
Somehow Michigan's probably going to jump them.
Or Notre Dame will move up quite a bit this week.
Yeah. I am fully prepared for Michigan to be number four after their win over Maryland this weekend. And
I'm fully prepared. I'm fully prepared for Notre Dame to run the table here because their schedule isn't very hard. And then they're going to say, well, we know Cincinnati beat them, but that was early in the year. And Notre Dame's just got the better resume because they're thinking money. Mm-hmm. And put Notre Dame in the playoff in the fourth spot instead of Cincinnati. I'm waiting for that to happen. Assuming Cincinnati wins out.
Yeah. And they're in pretty good shape right now. They keep playing like they are.
Yeah.
It seems like they play better against the good teams, right?
Yeah.
So don't get caught against somebody that you're just way better than here the last couple games.
Long hair goals. Save that last in.
All right. Nice pop-up I had there. L'Oreal.
Not a sponsor.
No, not of this show. If they want to pay us money to be, so be it. A year removed from leading Florida to the SEC championship game. That's right. Last year, Florida was in the SEC title game. They lost Alabama as close as anyone last year. This year, they lost Alabama by two. They lost in overtime to Missouri. It was kind of funny watching it. Missouri went for two at home, and they got it, 24-23, to become bowl eligible. Dating back to the final three games of just last season, the Gators are 2-9 against Power 5 opponents. Mullen was given the opportunity to coach the regular season finale against Florida State on Saturday, but he turned it down, saying he didn't want to be a distraction. Florida and Florida State are both 5-6. They're playing for bowl eligibility this Saturday, how far they have fallen. But here's the interesting thing, and Dan Mullen, I remember watching when Florida was playing LSU, the announcers said, because Ed Orgeron was on the hot seat for LSU, and Dan Mullen, he was asked about that. Dan Mullen, at the time, Florida was playing good ball. They had just come off losing by two to Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Mullen was not on the hot seat at all. Dan Mullen said this to the broadcast crew of CBS. He said, in the SEC, he goes, if I lose to LSU, I'm probably on the hot seat tomorrow. And he said, Ed Orgeron just won a national championship a year and a half ago, and he's on the hot seat. He goes, if I lose to LSU, I'm probably on the hot seat tomorrow. And they were never the same from then on after that comment. And they went 5-6. But here's the thing. Dan Mullen has been fired. His record in four seasons at Florida, 34-15, pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The Gators now will be hiring their fourth head coach in eight seasons. And here's another interesting thing. The last three head coaches for Florida have all made it to the SEC title game.
It's not like they've really been horrible, like, say, Florida State recently. I mean, I guess the best place to go make a lot of money and get fired is the SEC.
Oh, for sure.
And I still think it's the Alabama factor. It's Nick Saban getting a lot of guys a lot of money and then getting them fired very quickly. I mean, how do you build a program when you change coaches every 2 years?
You don't.
Just like look at Texas now. You know, they blew out Tom Herman and now Steve Sarkisian. And there's reports out of Texas that there are boosters pulling the strings that are telling the head honchos at Texas, based on race, who's going to play. And there are reports that Nick Saban told Tom Herman, don't take that job. He was aware of that. Whether these reports are true, I don't know. And Sarkisian went ahead and took the money, which if I'm him, I might have done it anyway, too. And so they're letting the inmates run the asylum. They're letting the people that make a whole bunch of money run the Texas football program, and they're running it into the ground. And they deserve that, because if you're going to allow them to do it, but if you don't allow them to do it, then they're not going to give you the money. But at some point, you just got to call their bluff and say, too bad, I'm not going to take your money. But this is what worries me about college sports, is that boosters are becoming more and more powerful, more and more big, big, big donors. And they can say, you know what? I'll pay $10 million and get rid of that coach because I don't like him. I don't like him. He rubbed me the wrong way. I know he won 9 games. I don't care. He didn't beat Alabama. He's out. He didn't beat Oklahoma. He's out. I don't care. I got the money. I'll buy him out. Here, you know what? I'll give you a check for $30 million, and you can pay the $10 million to get rid of the guy I don't like, and here's $20 million to go give the other guy a upfront bonus if you want. I mean, and that's scary when people with just money starts to rule these things.
Listen, I know from the sources I have a situation where it's the other side of that, too, where they want to get rid of a coach.
Mm-hmm.
But main booster says, okay, you're not getting my money anymore if you get rid of him.
So you hang on to him.
Yeah, so you hang on to him, and
mm-hmm.
my name's not on your building anymore if you get rid of the coach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Your facility, whatever you got, you know, your football field or, right. you know, whatever program right. it is, whatever sport it is, you know.
Right.
It can go that way, too. You know,
no doubt.
Like you feel like, hey, this guy's got to get out, but Booster won't let me fire him.
That's a good point. That's the counterpoint.
What I'm saying when I say that is it's all bad. It's all not good for college athletics from that aspect of it. It is great to have the money in the facilities.
Sure.
But it's not good to have people that are outside
pulling the strings,
ruling the roost, like you would say, and just taking care of everything.
Due to playoffs, Washburn season ends. They lose to Harding 30-14. Northwest Missouri State rolls Central Washington 50-21. So it'll be Northwest Missouri State at Harding. Second round of Division II playoffs. There was some college basketball over the weekend. Wichita State lost to Arizona in a close game by 4 in the semis of the tournament out in Vegas. But then they come back and beat UNLV last night.
Craig Porter to play it in. Fishel hands him the ball. Etienne breaks toward it, starts up court, and a blocking foul on Keyshawn Gilbert. And it's a two-shot opportunity. First one, good. If he makes this, it's a one-point lead with 3.4 seconds to go. Free throw, good, he got them both. Tyson Etienne gives the Shockers a one-point lead, pass up to half court. It's Baker who falls down. The fans wanted a foul, no foul called. Wichita State wins.
Shockers win 74-73. They're now 4-1 on the season. K-State men are in action tonight at the Tip-Off Classic, Hall of Fame Classic there in Kansas City. That'll be on ESPN News tonight at 8 o'clock against number 16 Arkansas. K-State 2-0, but this will be their first true test of the season. Bruce Weber on taking on the Hogs.
Well, they have versatility. They have athleticism. They got a lot of people that can score defensively. They'll throw a lot of different things at you to kind of create, you know, a little bit of chaos, I think. You know, it's different than Press Virginia or something like that, you know, where you're a constant press. But this is just kind of, they'll switch everything. They'll run and jump you. They'll take away side out of bounds. And it's like those key possessions are the things that have been big difference makers for them.
8 o'clock tip-off tonight on ESPN News, K-State versus Arkansas. KU will play Thursday in their tournament. They'll take on North Texas at 1:30. They have not released game times for Friday or Saturday. I don't know how in the world they're supposed to schedule KU games in our system if we don't know what time they're going to play.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because we have family we're going to see, and so we will not have a show
coming up on Friday, or of course not on Thursday either, with Thanksgiving. Family's going to come first for us on Thursday and Friday, because Dusty and I don't get to see our families very much. So that's what's going to happen there. So I don't know if we'll have KU basketball for you on the radio on Friday or Saturday or not, because I don't. They got to give us some options here, and then we can try to guess. Yeah. I would guess KU's going to win all the way through, but I haven't been given that information yet.
Exactly.
They just revealed it yesterday, what time they're going to play on Thursday. So there's one of those issues with TV. So KU will be in action on Thursday, on Thanksgiving Day. And Paul Pierce was inducted in the College Basketball Hall of Fame. He was in NBA Hall of Fame, and they're like, you know what, he seems to be good enough. He might only put him in the College Hall of Fame too, which he was pretty good for 3 years at the University of Kansas. Speaking of the NBA, LeBron with a cheap shot on a Detroit Pistons player last night. If you didn't see it, it wasn't good. They were boxing out, and LeBron just threw an elbow nice and high. And, of course, LeBron's going to act like it's an accident. To me, it didn't look that – it looked kind of cheap. But anyway, Isaiah Stewart was the one that he hit. And Isaiah Stewart then absolutely lost his mind and was trying to fight the entire Laker team last night. And the guy was profusely bleeding all over his face. Mm-hmm. I understand him being upset. I don't blame him for being upset. LeBron's supposed to be suspended probably for this. And Isaiah Stewart will get a good suspension, and I'm sure more than LeBron, because of the way he went nuts and lost his mind. But if you didn't see the video, you can see it. And what was interesting is, remember Malice in the Palace? That was at Auburn Hills.
Yeah.
This game last night, Pistons and Lakers, because it was Isaiah Stewart for the Pistons versus LeBron and Lakers, was in Detroit at the Pistons' home court. Now, the Palace at Auburn Hills has been imploded, yeah. Okay? They got a new facility. But isn't that crazy that I would say this was the most explosive situation on the court that I've seen since Malice in the Palace? And both these situations that happened on the Detroit Pistons' home floor. I mean, Isaiah Stewart was pushing guys to the ground on his own team to go after the Lakers and go after LeBron. He was livid. It was interesting that the headlines, LeBron and Stewart go at it. LeBron was back about 50 feet away, not wanting any piece of it. So don't sit here and act like they got into it. LeBron took a cheap elbow. Stewart was writhing in pain. And by the time they yelled at each other for 2 seconds, they separated them. And then Stewart was trying to go after everybody, not LeBron necessarily. Or maybe he was trying to get to LeBron. And then he went into the tunnel. And then they said he ran to the tunnel. Like, oh, my gosh, he could go all the way through the tunnel and come through the other side and try to get the Lakers from the other corner of the arena. So they were warning Lakers. Look out, he's coming around. Like, what is this? It's the fifth grade?
Yeah.
I mean, crazy stuff there between the Pistons and the Lakers last night. Lakers did win the game, though, 120 to 116.
Yeah, I was watching something on ESPN, and they had this, like, big old block in the corner that says LeBron James ejected from game, and I'm like, we're really like keeping this on the TV screen for this whole time?
Breaking news.
For like 30 minutes it was on the screen, LeBron James ejected from game, and I'm like, can you tell me why or show me what happened? Or
yeah,
also, why does it need to be on an eighth of my screen in the corner, like, or 16th, whatever it is?
Yes. Because it's breaking news, Dusty, yeah. And everybody wants to know.
It was a West Virginia game I just had on in the background or something, and that was on there, and I'm like, what are we doing here?
Well, I've been asking that question for a very, very long time when it comes to national coverage and media and everything else. By the way, the ESPN Plus broadcast of KU versus TCU left just a little bit to be desired, and I'm not talking about the announcers. I'm talking about, I mean, there were a few plays where you didn't even see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
The camera wouldn't even keep up. It was... You wouldn't get replays 95% of the time. It was, I think, a Bush League broadcast. So I understand people complain about $6.99, although it's still only $6.99 for a whole month. You're not paying $6.99 per game. But still, for you put the label ESPN on it, and that's ESPN Plus, that's still got to get a lot better.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.